Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey, bitch, what is your whole deal? Hey, bitch, just tell us how. Sex, fucking, dating, and love. Seek treatment. If you're boring as fuck, seek treatment. If you're unlucky in love, seek treatment. If you just can't take a hit, well, seek treatment. With Kat
and Pat.
Hey.
Hey.
It's Kat.
And Pat.
And this is Seek Treatment.
Seek Treatment, a podcast about
boys, sex,
fucking, dating, and
love.
When
I thought you were gonna say love with me.
I wasn't going to and didn't.
Yeah, I noticed that about you.
You know, I don't understand about poetry is like whenever for some reason that introduction reminded me of poetry because it felt like just saying randomly parts of a sentence on different lines is what that felt like.
Turn on original sound recording. That's me like reading the Zoom thing in poetry voice.
Do you have to do a certain amount of syllables? Like, is that what poetry is all about? Or you just truly go off and do whatever you feel like?
You literally do whatever you feel like. And then some people agree that it's like academic and some people agree that it's bad. And then no one really knows.
Yeah.
But I think
you
mine's
know, the romantics
good,
thought that, I'm... you know, the romantics, like Wordsworth actually thought that poetry was a spontaneous overflow of emotion.
Well, that's how I feel about my poetry. I'm very Wordsworth.
You're being extremely Wordsworth towards me on our podcast.
Yeah, you know the Taylor Swift song where she goes, "Tell me my words worth." I'm like, oh, car. Take me to the lakes where all the poets went to die. I don't belong.
You know that song where she's like, "You're a cheer captain and I'm in the bleachers."
Yeah, I know that one too.
And then we're kind of deeper cuts. A lot of people don't know about that one.
Totally. You know, I finally found out about her house on Cornelia.
Well, oh, you
walked
know,
by I'm... there. Walked by there with friend of the pod, Harry Hill. Shout out. We got to have him on.
Okay. We must have Harry Hill on. Harry Hill is a name that reminds me of Harry Hamlin, Lisa Rinna's husband. Is that something to say on a podcast?
I can actually say something. I actually, for the first time in my life, have something to say about that on my podcast, which is that I did a deep dive because I don't know who told me. Someone was like, that guy. Here's what goes on in my brain. That guy who still is like creeping around the Kardashians is dating his second teen.
Oh, Scott Disick?
Did you tell me that?
I don't think I told you that, but I recently learned that as well because I'm watching the final season.
He is dating, maybe then, full circle moment, maybe you told
me. Yes, he's dating Harry and Lisa's daughter.
Yes, and then I found out about another teen he dated, which is a girl who's Nicole Richie's little sister. And I ended up kind of on a normal weekday afternoon watching a video where she gets to open and see herself on the cover of Cosmo. And it's her in this really fancy backyard. And she's like, oh my God, y'all, it's here. It's here. It's here. I'm going to die. It's here. And then she like opens this like big envelope and she gets to see herself on the cover. And I'm like, must be nice.
Yeah. He's dating Amelia, who is Lisa's daughter, who like Lisa made the choice to make her eating disorder incredibly public on the famous TV show Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. And it's like unclear if Amelia was comfortable with that. And And I always forget about her because I like a little bit better. I like Delilah Belle, who is the older one, I think.
Mm-hmm. I saw some pictures of those girls.
I'll never forget when those girls were like teaching like Savannah how to make like cucumber spaghetti. You know, like those machines where you put a cucumber in and it's like
just. We will look back on that and it will be crazy.
You know, I have something I finally have to say, and that's just because something's stringy doesn't mean it's spaghetti. Like that's not what is everything that's a string shape is not spaghetti, and that's okay, and that's even healthy.
I know. I'm so sick and tired of being told to eat vegetable-shaped... Wait, I'm sorry. They've brainwashed me. Spaghetti-shaped vegetables with my sauces, okay?
And to say it's spaghetti, that is so crazy. That's like rolling something into a ball, rolling bread into a ball and being like, this is an apple now. It's like, no, it's bread.
I was just thinking, you roll something into a little cylinder and you say, no, it's a marshmallow.
Kind of interesting to go cylinder with marshmallow. I wouldn't have thought that's
yeah,
what
your
the shape
example was a lot better. Well, I was going to say ball, but we already did that. We already tackled the shape of ball.
We're already completely. Let me tell you this: two comedians take down the shape of ball on their podcast.
Speaking of balls, balls aren't really a ball shape now, are they? They're more kind of hanging pendulums.
No, that is true. You know, I'm finally ready to say something that we haven't said in years, and that's that if you think everything string shaped is spaghetti, even if it's vegetable, seek treatment. Like literally, seek treatment because you probably are deeply unwell. And my other thing to seek treatment about, wait, what did you just say again?
I was actually deciding that actually some balls are really kind of sucked up there and they look more like balls.
Oh, like, are you talking about testicles?
Yeah. But then, you know, I had the idea, if you're going to call it spaghetti, it's not even that. It's like pretending it's as good as spaghetti is offensive to me. Don't pretend
that's
good.
Were doing. That's what Delilah Bell and Amelia were doing.
It's like having it's like have pasta, experience your life.
Experience that. Someone told me that the only way your brain can get any energy is from carbs, and so everyone who says that you shouldn't eat carbs, well, that's why their brain doesn't have any energy.
Well, you know what, I think we should have a spinoff show called Experience That.
Just what we need, like a second podcast or that's
well,
essentially the
I don't
same.
Know
based on a catchphrase that we will stop saying after 2 weeks.
I just feel like there's some part of our narrative, like at some point I had the idea in my head that someone in their right mind would come along and kind of put us on TV, and while that's yet to happen, whenever we do, we'll get to say, yeah, this is called Experience That.
Now, I have to say another thing that I want people to seek treatment for. When in the world are we as a human species gonna come together and say, like, just saying the word balls or like isn't funny or a joke? Like, I'm so sick of being like, oh, you love ball, like every time balls are mentioned, it's like, oh, she loves balls, and it's like people literally cry laughing in 2021.
I've not heard someone say that someone loves balls lately.
You've not heard someone being like, oh, I want some, it's like, oh, give it to her. She loves balls. Because like, it's like about meatballs or something. You know what I mean? It's like about like,
someone
talks about balls in a non-sexual way. And then someone's like, yeah, you love balls, don't you? And they're going testicles with it. And it's like, okay, like testicles exist. Some people call them balls. I don't, but some people do. And that's okay. And it's not funny. And that's okay that it's not funny.
Yeah, but as if we've learned anything from living in New York and attempting to do comedy, it's that 99% of people could not find something funny to say if they were on their deathbed. Wait, speaking of balls, you know what's funny? I don't like my guy will mind saying that he doesn't even really care about his balls. It's a myth. He feels lied to. He's like, everyone always told me it would feel so good when it was the balls, but it's not really what it is.
See, yeah, that's how my guy is. But I actually am, as a guy, feel deeply passionate about my balls, and I actually love ball play.
Oh, and what do you like people to do to your balls?
And even when I jerk and I'm watching porn, but I'm not ready to come yet, when I do a few more videos first, I'll just kind of like stroke my balls.
Oh, that's fun. That's nice.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Can I tell you what we have our guest is in the waiting room, but before we let him in, can I tell you one of the things I got for Bri for his 30th? You're going to love this. It's very like...
anal bead.
No, it's very like sex columnist. You know what? I have to say this. I went to the pleasure chest. And I kind of thought it would be the place where you'd have to be like, stop giving me advice. Like, I'm embarrassed. Yeah. I just want to look around. Instead, I was like begging them to pay attention to me. I was like, what should I get? I've had sex before and I liked it. What else might I like? But what I actually ended up getting was a Wee Vibe, hopefully they'll sponsor us, where it goes, it magnetizes itself into my little panties. And then it, Brian, not only with a control, but through an app on his phone, no matter the distance, can control the vibrator. Come on.
You got him for his birthday a vibrator for you.
That's exactly what he said.
That's incredible.
He was like, thanks for getting yourself a vibrator for my birthday. Well,
it was really crazy.
It was just one part of his gift. Mm-hmm. The other was I played with his balls. All right.
And he hated it. And he hated it.
He didn't even hate it. Yeah, yeah. The opposite of hate is indifference. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, people love to say that. We have such a fab guest today. And put your ears open for Clark Maher.
Hi.
Wait, now to have a guest on my podcast who I actually saw on the big screen for what I wasn't sure screen. Was a date and in a rare occurrence actually turned out to be a date is really thrilling.
Wow. You saw it in the theater, not on an airplane?
I did not see it on the airplane.
I saw it in the airplane and the guy next to me turns out to be my date.
you never know. Crazy things have happened at 30,000 feet.
Whenever I'm on a plane and someone's next to me, I'm like, is this a date? Or are we just friends? But no, I saw it. I saw it on a date and it was fun. It was fun. Yeah. You were so good in it.
I will receive that compliment in 1 second. Where is Sally? Is she here? Is she in the chat? So I have to tell you this story. The reason why I'm here, forgive me for taking over your show. I am a control freak and I'm also a clinical narcissist. So Sally is in the room. Hi, Sally.
Sally.
Let me tell you, Sally is our intern. Okay. And I do want to say, for the record, I have been listening to Seek Treatment for a couple of years now, on and off.
Oh my God.
Clark,
so you're humiliating us on our podcast.
Clark, I'm absolutely mortified.
And I am hip. I am cool. However, I do have to give Sally her props because she is an undergraduate at the University of Wisconsin.
She's the youngest person alive.
Truly. And she's right getting, get this, college credit to be the intern for my podcast, which is the scam of all scams. Honestly,
oh my God.
God bless you, Sally. And
can you give her a D so we get a 2.0 factored into her GPA?
Can we include this on the pod? Because I think it's fascinating.
Yes,
or
we must.
Or is this top secret?
We must. Okay. Because she suggested Seek Treatment. I asked for marketing ideas from her. And this speaks to her brilliance. It was one of the first pods she put in our little doc, our little Excel spreadsheet. So she's the reason I'm here.
Sally, marry me.
Thank you, Sally.
I've listened since 2019. Pat, you wished me a happy birthday.
On cameo.com?
In you.
Oh my God.
Yeah, cameo.com.
Sally and Clark, I need to hear, how does one connect with an intern?
Yeah, so this also speaks to Sally's resilience, her perseverance. She identified Simone, my producer, who is this bomb producer. She produces for A Little Late with Lily Singh. She produced for Steve Harvey before. She's like a proper late night television producer. And Sally slid into her DMs on LinkedIn.
Oh,
Sally.
My God.
Like a psychopath. I was doing it just...
No, Sally,
oh my God, Sally, you're already more successful than all of us here today. That is so impressive.
And by all of us, she means just me and her. You're more successful than me and Catherine.
I've never experienced LinkedIn.
Wait, I kind of have. But wait, Sally, are you like the kind of college student that's like ambitious? Me and my boyfriend have a fake drag persona that we like don't know which of us will inhabit one day called Ambitious Goals. This is very like whenever we're like sending an email, we're like, okay, I'm being Ambitious Goals today. But when I hear about a young person having an internship, I'm like, she's ambitious. Are you ambitious?
I guess in some ways. I didn't used to be. Like in high school, I never was. And then in college, like I'll just get spurts of it. And then totally. And then get something like this.
College is all about going on college is always for me, college is all about going on like nbc.com/careers and be like, am I on The Office? And finding out I'm not, and then being like, okay, I guess I'll
It's really embarrassing. It is humiliating. And it's like, I'm like being on the Sony website being like, am I going to be a record executive? And I'm like, I don't have 40 forms. And they don't even, they're like, give us your forms. And I'm like, you, what forms? And it's like, I have to know. Anyways.
My intern story, because I have to say, Sally is being very humble. She has already done more for our show in the few weeks that she's been our intern than I did in any of the internships that I had combined. Was nowhere near as, I mean, I was ambitious and I sort of had that like psychotic drive, but it was not matched with execution.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
Okay, we're poaching Sally.
Yeah. Everyone should, honey. And she is graduating soon, right? You're a senior.
Yeah, but I graduate in December.
Okay.
So I have one.
So she's gonna be on the market in a matter of months.
Sally, what's your dream? Are you like, I'm going to LA? I'm Hollywood.
I don't feel very Hollywood. I spent the semester in New York, and I saw you because this is like, I'm just like really just pulling out these.
Okay, where was I? Because I've been quarantining. I've been quarantining, Sally.
Yeah, actually, I didn't see you in quarantine, but I saw you when. Okay. In 2019 when I started actually listening to the pod, and I was working for Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, and you came to Christmas on Ice and you were wearing a beret. And my friend Tessa, who's another intern, came and she said, I started wearing a beret because Catherine started wearing a beret.
Oh my God.
I looked at her and I said, I like your beret. I was like, that's huge.
That's Sally, very mean, girls.
You just made my day. That was about 40 years ago. I was so young then.
Yeah, you retired berets for yourself.
That was one of my first dates with my now lover.
Mm.
So full circle, kind of one of Pat's first dates was seeing Love, Simon. One of mine was showing me what a beret looks like on my head.
Yeah.
The point is, Clark, you're here.
I'm here.
We're so happy to have you. We're so honored to have you on the pod. What's going on with you? So first of all, your home looks gorgeous. I love this big painting behind you.
Thank you. That is actually the first piece of art that I ever bought in my life. It is a piece from my friend's senior thesis. Shout out to Andrew Purpura. It is, as you can tell, in the abstract expressionist space. There's a little bit of impressionism going on there as well. But it's Monhegan Island in Maine is the view. It's sort of a beach view.
Wait, it's so gorgeous.
Wait, that's the art, like, or that's where you are?
That is the art. I wish I was on Monhegan Island in Maine. And I would say emotionally, I identify as a person who is on Monhegan Island in Maine.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
But I am actually in the deepest pit of hell, which you might call Los Angeles.
Oh, wow. My God.
Can I ask where I am?
Yes, of course.
Even though I don't know.
I am in right on the border of Mar Vista and Venice. So I'm a West Side girl.
Okay, what?
I don't know any places. So
but you've been in LA forever.
I have been in LA for 8 years full time, 10 years off and on. So it does feel like forever.
Wow, but and only answer if you feel comfortable, you're a young person as well, no?
I am young, yes.
on a scale of Sally to
me.
Old.
On a scale of Sally to me, how young do you feel?
I'm probably closer to y'all than you think. I actually just celebrated a birthday 2 weeks ago.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. I turned over 18 to play high school on TV, and it was great. I feel good about it. I feel, you know, like I've sort of leveled up a bit. I would say, though, my soul is quite old. I'm like
really?
60s, 70s, yeah. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can see my library over here. I'm reading all the time. I do not like to go out. I ordered dinner the other day, and I was like, I was texting a friend, and I was like, oh my God, I just got Takaya. I just got delivery on the way for dinner. And he texted back, Clark, it's 4:30. And I
That's
was like,
heaven, though.
Don't judge me. I'm hungry. I'm going to eat when I eat. I'm not leaving my house, you know?
When it comes to meals, it's like, yeah, eat anytime you want. And it's like, we can call them different things. Like, this can be called dinner, I guess, but it's like completely arbitrary. And language is so crazy that way.
Wow. That is really interesting. I love an early dinner.
I used to be told I could play high school. I used to be told that until probably 8 months ago. And what happened was 8 months ago, I got 18 trillion crow's feet, which I'm actually fine with because I think they can be really hot. Mm-hmm. And but what happened, I forgot, I'm sure I was going to say, I don't know if I've told this story on the podcast, but I'm actually sure I have because it's the only thing I ever talk about. But famously, I think I told it in the most recent episode, but I posted a picture of me on from Search Party, and someone I'm supposed to be playing a twink in the episode, so like kind of younger than I actually am. And someone from the screen grab I posted without context commented and said, "Wow, that aging makeup they used is so realistic." As though I was playing like a 70-year-old, and they like made me up. And I was like, no, that is actually me playing young. And if anything, they made me up to look younger. And so I wish you the best, and thank you for supporting.
But here's the thing, and this is the thing that I say to myself every single day when I have an identity crisis about it. It's all relative. And you in that scene, they did you dirty by putting you in a trailer, first of all.
Totally.
And, you know, there was no, like, help for you.
There was no help. You know? I was calling for help.
Left and right, where is the youth? And they were like, what if we put this hat on you? What if we put you in these muted tones and this dark background?
Totally.
Next to our main cast, who is probably, you know, similar age to you. Mm-hmm. It's all relative. This is what the casting director is telling me. If you are standing next to a bunch of 30-year-olds and we're all 30, then we say we're 18, then the audience is like, great, we're 18.
That's so true.
And actually, funnily enough, a friend of mine who, because I think about this a lot, it's a complex that I've now developed, being a person who's not in high school playing high school.
Yeah.
I think about it all the time and I'm obsessed with it and I'm like frantically rolling my face with my jade roller every 5 minutes. Uh-huh. But a friend of mine who works in tech, she does VC, like watches television in the background. You know, she's not studying frame by frame like we all are. She texted me, I love this new show, Pen 15. And I was like, yeah, it's so good, right? And she was like, where did they find these 13-year-olds to play these girls? I'm not even kidding. She literally thought Maya and Anna were 13.
Though we joke and we laugh, but Catherine, if you'll remember, I watched the pilot of Pen 15 with you and I didn't know anything about it. And I was like, mm-hmm. Who wrote this show? And you were like the two leads. And I was like, but there's children. I remember like immediately feeling stupid and like trying to play it off like I was kidding. But I don't know if you ever picked up on it, but I thought they were children.
I know
as well.
I didn't. I don't remember that
and
now.
In that way, I am VC. And in that way, I'm tech. In that way.
And a fantastic actor. You fooled her.
Yeah, absolutely. I had no idea.
Oh, yes, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, I'm giving you your flowers, Pat.
I guess I'm good at my craft after all. And sometimes it takes being wrong about about Maya and Anna's age to learn that you're an incredible actor. And that is my story in this industry.
And that's my gift to you.
Thank you. wait, what's your pod going to be?
So my podcast is called Soul Bomb by Clark Moore. And it's all about healing and identity. It's sort of, I would say the elevator pitch is Millennial Super Soul Sunday.
Oh, cool. Oh, my God.
I love Super Soul Sunday.
Right? We live for it. But also there's the, you know, Oprah having done what she's done for so long and being so good at it. It's also a little inside baseball sometimes. And I think... Mm-hmm. When you, oh my God, did I just speak ill about Mother O? That was not my intention.
No, I don't think so at all.
You spoke ill on us, if anything, for not fully knowing her entire
world. Okay, good.
Well, I agree, Clark, that I think there has been a tonal shift in some of Oprah's work, mm-hmm. but I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's like the next phase of Oprah. Like I'm speaking about, obviously, the interview, as we'll call it.
Yes, which, by the way, we did an hour and a half on, which is not my show. My show is like interview-based. It's very biographical. It's like personal histories. And I am such a royalist that when I saw the Meghan and Harry interview, I like went into an emotional spiral for the entire week after. And I'm honestly still processing it. And so we did an hour and a half flash episode just breaking down we had a friend of mine who's a royal correspondent.
Oh, my God.
Talked about, like, we got into it.
So what was the takeaway for you personally?
We all three had different takeaways, me, the correspondent, and Simone. I would say mine is probably the most reverent take. I am very much, I want everyone to be happy. I want everyone to feel, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like the opposite of this like sensationalist culture and like cancel and drag her. I'm like, let's be happy and let's heal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really saw, God, I did not intend to come on here and do 10 minutes about Meghan and Harry, but
no,
we need a, we didn't really touch on it.
I will say my feelings are, I originally felt like when Meghan and Harry, when that whole thing was starting, I was like, what an opportunity here for the royal family to connect with, as Meghan said, 70% of the Commonwealth who's non-white, all these people who don't look like them, who have a relationship with them because of their, you know, their position in the Commonwealth, but don't, you know, what are their, what's their connection to British royalty? It feels very far away. And I felt like Meghan and Harry brought it to us. It made it accessible. It made it exciting. And then when they were the Fab Four with William and Kate, it was just like, it was hot. Honestly, it was hot.
It was hot.
And I was like,
it was hot.
My king, you know, it made me really excited for William, you know, like I'm actually also going to take this opportunity to invite my mother, who I know is listening to this podcast now that it's airing. I'm going to go ahead and invite you to leave the chat, Mom. I'm not going to say anything crazy, I promise, but I definitely don't want you hearing what
Clark's mom, you're not welcome here, and you need to get out. You're not welcome here, Clark's mom.
Get
go.
Out.
Go.
So now that she's gone, it really made me hard for the monarchy. Like, I was excited about this hot, young, new take on leadership and service. And so it then was, to see how it turned so quickly against her because of racism and sex, you know, like all of those things, was just so sad. And it also, to finish out this monologue, it mimicked so much of my personal experiences being Black in the workplace and experiencing, like, I have so much to offer, I have so much to bring here, but because the people who are in power are so small-minded and so short-sighted, they can't even imagine the ways in which I can contribute here, and so they're keeping me over in this tiny little corner and misusing me, mistreating me, you know. A lot of that obviously is projection, but I think it mimics a lot of people's experiences. And so that was part of the, you know, the charge for me watching it, at least.
Yeah, totally. And I know what you mean about it feeling really hot when it was like the Four. And it felt like to me as a 32-year-old gay man in America, it felt like I was like, okay, it's the OC at this point. Like when there's two guys dating two girls, it's the OC. And so that was really exciting. And but yeah, I think that, like, and my mom is someone too who, like, really has always from, like, childhood had this kind of, like, relationship that I think some boomer Americans have with the royal family, where it's like kind of part of the appeal, I think, is that it isn't accessible. And it's like these people live these lives, and it's almost how we are with the Kardashians. But that was, and it's like the part of the fun is that I can never have that or something. And they're like these kind of untouchables. But it was so interesting to hear Meghan's take, especially for her to be like, I grew up in LA, like, I know celebrities, like, this is not celebrity, like, this is something else. Like, that was so interesting to me.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say about Oprah in that interview is, like, her tone is, like, I don't know if I word this correctly, like, more laid back, like, kind of, like, chiller. Like, she's
it's
not
so
stressed about
she knows exactly what she's doing. She's like, here, she's like, here you are, palm up hand vibes.
And you always have with her, but especially then you just feel so taken care of because you're like, this is, like, a really high stakes, it feels, interview. And she is not worried it's going to, like, go left. Like, she's just, like, knows it's fine. Like, she can do it. And it's,
she's in control.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's and the feeling that, like, I never have in my life.
Yeah,
and so to see that, I mean, as you said about aspiration, I think it's important to have people in our lives who live a version of life that maybe we'll never actually reach, but that we can work towards, you know, someone who's, and I think it's important for us to choose who those people are consciously and wisely. I love that you bring up the Kardashians as an example. because, you know, we're all sort of like trying to be better people. Or I don't know that we all are, but many of us are. And it's nice to have something to point to. I mean, for me, my relationship with the royal family is similar to what you were saying, Pat. We grew up watching the Christmas address every year of the Queen. It's like part of my relationship with my grandmother. It's part of my relationship with Christmas in general. They've always just kind of like been in the background and this really stable force, which is nice, especially in chaotic, you know, like these chaotic times. And for them to be expressly apolitical, you know, to be like, I don't care. As she said, you either voted for Brexit or you voted to remain. I am the queen of everyone. You know, I love you all. We're all part of this country. As you try to divide us, here I am in the middle holding it together.
Totally.
And I think that's admirable.
I also think it's like we grow up like, you know, obviously in a place where there's not like a quick king and queen and like our kind of first impressions.
Wait, what? I like take my crown off. I'm like, okay. News to me.
Our like first impressions is all like cartoon and like Disney adjacent. And so like, growing, like when you're little hearing about those things, I do think you like really romanticize it a bit in a way, like that feels magical. Not that I've never cared that much. I've always been like interested by like things like the order of succession are always interesting to me because I really like numbers and I'm like, I'm obsessed with like different people dying and it going to someone random. Like that's so funny to me. But I'm obsessed with different people dying. And I remember I remember being in New Jersey, my mom like was shaking me awake and like bringing me downstairs to watch like Princess Anna's funeral. And I was like, I don't know who this lady is.
But oh my God. More. My mom, I grew up with, okay, my mom's relationship to the royal family is the same as it is to the feature film Titanic. And okay. Clark, famously, our moms don't care about Titanic. She does not care about the song My Heart Will Go On. Yeah. And whenever that would come up or the royal family would come up, she'd be like, ugh, no, it's not real. And I was like, and she does the same thing with Valentine's Day. She's like, it's not real. I'm like, what if Valentine's Day isn't real, then what is real?
Right.
I say that with I say that with love towards my mother, who is, you know, absolutely obsessed with her. She's the best. But I never really knew about it, even though I am horny for England. Say it with me.
Are you an Anglophile?
Absolute. I cannot.
I'm not an Anglophile.
I can't. The long distance romances, I mean, they've taken their toll on me. They're just, I think I'm done with it, but it was very fun for a while.
The chapter is closed.
The book is, yeah. It's a hardcover
book. It's been too
exhausting.
Oh, it has been.
Are you guys watching?
Come on, in my fantasy, yeah, the book of my life is a hardcover. I'm not going to tell myself, sure.
I think it's important to visualize that. Yeah, be specific.
Hey.
Hey, it's us.
Hi, how are you? We actually just want to chat a little bit about something that you need to know about College Dipsy, because everyone needs an escape, but those can be hard to come by right now during this absolute hellscape that we call reality. So enter Dipsy. Let yourself get lost in a world where good things happen and where your pleasure is the only priority.
Honey, a world where good things happen, I would literally love to be invited.
Now I've heard everything.
And if I can bring a plus one, honey, I'm bringing you.
Thank you.
You know, so basically, Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories designed to turn you on. Each Dipsy audio story features characters that feel like real people in immersive scenarios, so you feel like you're right there. When I was locked in my hotel room in Toronto, I used Dipsy, and I absolutely jerked it to an amazing story about a girl sleeping with her professor during office hours.
Oh my God, that's so hot. Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories designed to turn you on. And yes, they have stories that deal with gay. Listen to stories about hooking up with your hometown crush, even if he's same sex as you. And also, you can listen to a story about your coworker who you always had a little thing for. Or maybe, actually, a story that puts you in bed with someone who's telling you exactly what they'd want to do to you.
So the thing about Dipsy, babe, is that they also release new content every week. So there's always more to explore, no matter what you're into or what turns you on.
And if you need to wind down and you need to put sex down for 1 second, then Dipsy also has wellness sessions, sensual bedtime stories, and soundscapes to help you relax before you drift off.
So the amazing news is that for listeners of our show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/seek treatment. That's 30 days of full erotic access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/seek treatment. And once again, that's dipsystories.com/seek treatment. Feeling your best starts with what you eat. And Sakara, my number one girl, gives you the ability to not just eat healthy, but truly enjoy it with chef-crafted, plant-rich meals that build a foundation for radiant health.
Looking to change your diet? Well, here's a radical idea. What if, okay, instead of imposing restrictions and limits, which are not helpful, you actually nourished your body and gave it more of what it really needs? Kind of revolutionary, huh? Well, Sakara believes in giving you more of what's good for you.
And Sakara literally tastes so good. I'm obsessed with their breakfasts. Sakara is a nutrition company that focuses on overall wellness, starting with what you eat. Their organic, ready-to-eat meals are made with powerful plant-based ingredients, and they're designed to boost your energy, improve your digestion, and get your skin glowing. The menu of creative, chef-crafted, ready-to-eat breakfasts, lunches, and dinners changes weekly, so babe, you're never going to get bored. And a bonus, it's delivered fresh to your door anywhere in the U.S.
Along with delicious plant-rich meals, Sakara also offers daily wellness essentials like supplements and herbal teas to support your nutrition. Experience the transformative power of plants with their best-selling metabolism super powder made with organic raw cacao. It works to boost energy, eliminate bloating, minimize sugar cravings, and reduce fatigue. One of my oldest friends, fatigue.
Sakara has received rave reviews from, get ready for it, Vogue, Goop, The New York Times, and more, including me, Kitty Cat Coco, the girl who tried Sakara before they even sponsored her podcast.
And right now, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to sakara.com/seek treatment or enter promo code seek treatment at checkout. That's Sakara, sakara.com/seek treatment to get 20% off your first order. sakara.com/seek treatment.
Wait, Clark, are you in love right now?
I am, I'm not in love. No, and this is actually part of what I was prepping myself to talk about.
Yeah.
In coming on
the
podcast.
You mean not the royal family?
No, I did not expect to go that way, but it doesn't surprise
not my mom. Not my mom's relationship with the royal family is not.
Wait, what about my mom's relationship? You didn't want to talk about my mom's relationship to the Titanic song?
I will say it's the second time I've had that exact conversation in the last 24 hours, so it's not surprising that it happened to me. I'm obviously the common denominator. But I was listening more closely to some of the most recent episodes, just to sort of like get in the seek treatment headspace. Seek treatment.
Yes.
And these past couple of episodes have really gotten into it. They have really been like,
yeah, definitely.
And I'm the kind of sex positive person where I have to remind myself that I'm sex positive.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
totally.
I watched WAP and I was like, oh my God, like, you go, girl, I guess, you know? And I'm looking around like, right, this is good. This is right. Like, wait,
that's
right.
So funny.
Okay, like, what's our take here? Meanwhile, I'm like, my heart is stopped. It's similar how I felt about Nas's video, where I was like, you
love.
Won't catch me twerking on the devil, but honey, you do it. You live your life, yeah, whatever you want to do.
I loved it.
What was I going to say?
Your privacy, of course, and if we ever bring up something you don't want to talk about, just say no.
Okay, perfect.
Like, I've struggled with sex negativity in a way that I've even embraced. And but do you feel like it's connected to like your upbringing, or do you feel like being queer and like trying to deal with that at a young age? Were you someone who like came out earlier or later? Do you feel?
Early, very early. Like, I have always been gay. I officially came out to my parents in, I'm trying to figure out the best way to say this. because I'm trying not to date myself.
Obsessed.
I've become one of those women who like lies about their age, you know, and I don't know how it happened.
You're wearing it well.
Thank you.
Hollywood does it to you.
So it really does. I came out to my parents in my freshman year of high school. I came out to friends starting in 7th and 8th grade.
2018.
Wait, 7th and 8th grade you came out to your friends?
Oh, wow.
7th and 8th grade to friends. That's but powerful. Also, I revealed this on my pod with one of y'all's friends, Matt Rogers.
Oh, love.
Last week's episode, I think, the first time I ever said the words, I'm gay, to another person was when I was 6 years old. In first grade, and I started a gay club at my school.
Oh my God, that's heaven.
Oh my God. Okay, you're a pioneer.
It was bizarre. I know.
Were there a lot of members?
It was me and a girl named Joanna who had two mommies.
Oh my God.
Aww. And it was just the two of us. I was the president, and she was the vice president.
And okay. She didn't have an office, and that's okay.
She didn't. And this is also, by the way, a little bit of a foreshadow for my Where Are Will section. Who were I? Mm-hmm. Who was I? Who will I be? Whatever.
Who are you? Who do you want to be?
This is all like laying the groundwork for.
Good.
I'm taking you on a journey even as your guest.
I'm obsessed. Love that.
Do you want in us? Control, just like Oprah.
Dare we dive in and ask you who were you?
But first, we're just talking about like coming out.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No worries. That, you know, I always hear people like Gen Z, Sally. Gen Z people will always be like, I feel like people don't like really come out anymore. Like, you don't even really need to. It's more laid back. It's like date who you want. And I'm kind of mm-hmm. like, can we have nothing fun anymore? Like, coming out is like one of the main dramatic things you can do. And if we're going to take that, then what's the point of even being gay if you're like not going to have to like give a tearful speech to your loved ones at some point?
It's much less fun, I will say. Yeah. But yes, all of that is connected to shame, 100%. It's connected to shame around queerness but also sexuality in general. I come from a very... Like, I've always joked that we're the, whatever the black version of wasps is. A friend of mine once said the Huxtables is the black version of wasps.
Yeah.
It's like Southern Protestant repression. And a lot of the conversations that I had with my mom growing up was sort of, you know, especially once I came out, I was like, why are you so homophobic? Why are you so afraid of gay sex? And she was like, oh, no, honey, it's not gay sex that I don't like. It's all sex.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, this is a completely different issue altogether. Like, she wouldn't let me go see Brokeback Mountain. And I was like, you're homophobic. And she was like, no, babe, I don't like to watch people have sex on screen. It makes me really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I'm so like, all of this is connected to that.
Totally.
I'm impressed she was even able to say that, because my parents are the same way, but they wouldn't say that. They would just be like, oh, I'm busy. Okay, my parents are British now. Oh, I'm busy.
Yeah, even
Kat, I love your British accent. You did it on a recent episode, and it was so good.
First of all, I'm so flattered that you actually listen to our podcast, because it's very kind. A lot of times I'll do a pod and be like, what's happening?
Well, I have to say, just while we're in this space, I'm sorry, Pat. We're in this space about the pod, I had sort of a shifting relationship with it, because at first, and this is truly a journey, at first, the first time I listened to it, I think I was introduced through Las Culturistas, maybe. I think there was a crossover that happened.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that was in the time of my life where I was, I'm really foreshadowing. Okay. That was in the time of my life where I was much more regimented, and I was working in tech. I was sort of like 9-to-5 girl, you know, listening to my podcasts on my commute, like the yuppie that I pretended to be. And it really, the lack of direction really made me uncomfortable at that time. Just as you were saying about like about feeling like Oprah's in control, I was listening to it and I was like, "Where are we go? I don't know. Where are we? It's really
so." In the way we're the opposite of Oprah, in that we are so out of control.
However, once the pandemic hit and all of my social interaction disappeared, the very thing that made me uncomfortable about your show at the beginning became the saving grace, because now it was like, there doesn't have to be a path. There doesn't have to be a plan. We're just in this together. Go listen to your friends Kat and Pat talk to you for an hour while you walk your doodle around Mar Vista.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we were trying to do all along.
And I got it. That's my point. I didn't get it at first because it was me, and then I shifted, and now I am grateful for the gift.
It's a funny little balance, and I'm sure you'll find this with your podcast where it's like you do start where like because I get stressed out by like structure when there's like certain things to hit, like that worries me, and of course I can get stressed out when it's like you're looking at like, you know, the top half of an hour, and it's like, what if I don't think of something to say in 10 minutes? And it's like, mm-hmm. well, you just have to like be like, well, I'll deal with that when I get to it. And it's the only way I'm able to like enjoy it is to not have to worry and just trust that, like, to me that's like the magic of, I mean, I was brought up in the improv comedy scene, and it's kind of that feeling of like just that you'll all kind of like have fun together. And it's, I don't know, that's like how it's fun to me.
That's a beautiful lesson.
I just pictured you like a baby in a bassinet, like left on the steps of the UCB in Chelsea, and they like raised you to be this like
totally. Yeah, it's like Aaron Jackson's.
We prayed.
I want to make it clear, I could never listen to this podcast, and I only listen to things that have a lot of structure and that are mostly about like very intense subjects. If I had to listen to myself talk about string cheese for 45 minutes, I would not like me either.
Most of our conversation at the top of the episode was around the culture surrounding like when you put, it was really 2018 in a nutshell, like when you put vegetables into the thing and then like they came out of strings and you just said, that's spaghetti now.
Mm-hmm.
That was never that spaghetti, you know? That was never spaghetti.
Mm-mm. And it never will be.
Yeah. It never
and as
be.
Someone who bravely went on the South Beach diet when she was 14 years old, there's a long history of
talk about trailblazer.
Yeah, about cauliflower kind of pretending, calling it yes. rice or calling it pizza dough. And it's just not, and we have to stop.
Really bad experience with cauliflower rice where I was in the Las Vegas airport, I think it was, or maybe it was the Reno. No, it was the Reno airport coming back from Tahoe. And I got this like Kung Pao chicken thing that was on a cauliflower rice bed. All of these things sound great, right? Turns out cauliflower rice smells so bad.
Oh, really?
And it clings to you. It smells like when it was cooked, it smells like vegetables that are going bad. but not from close up, only from a distance, specifically the amount of space between me and the person I was sitting next to in the airport, who after about a minute and a half decided he did not want to sit next to my cauliflower rice smelling body anymore while we were waiting for our plane. And he and his wife got up and left. And I actually thought it was him. When I sat down, I was like, oh, this man smells so bad, but I'm a good person and I'm going to suffer through it. And then he got up and left and I was like, oh, it's me.
Wow. And that's how you learned that your plane ride was actually not a date with that man.
There we go. And his wife.
I thought it was love.
And his wife. So let's just do who are you? And I know
I think
I'm
it's
the one.
Time.
I'm the one who jumped in and said, "Wait, let's talk about coming out." I said that.
Well, Pat's favorite questions are: when did you CO? Did you hook in heist? And do you have a boyfriend?
And how many boyfriends have you ever had? And how many boyfriends have you ever had? Mm-hmm. And on this podcast, three boyfriends to have in your lifetime is a lot.
Do you want me to answer those questions?
No, we'll get to them. Okay. Let's just do who are you, who are you, who you want to be.
Because okay. I think you're about to tell us an exciting tale.
So I do, because I'm crazy, like I said, because I'm type A, I do have notes here. I have prepared for this podcast.
This is amazing.
So who were you? Who was I? I mostly am thinking about, like, as I was visualizing this, I was thinking about who are the women? And we've even called in some of their names already. Mm-hmm. But who were these iconic women who taught me who I wanted to be or created the archetype that I would then go in and out of in each of these phases? So who was I? I would say I was Blair Waldorf. Sally knows this. We've been talking about Gossip Girl all day.
I love Blair.
I'm so jealous that you and Sally have this like beautiful working relationship.
I know. Sally, if you have any friends that want to be interns, maybe this is an intern connection, a work connection. My roommate's here too, by the way.
Hey, Tyler.
He says hi.
He's obsessed with me.
He's obsessed with you. All 6'7" of him. 6 feet, 7 inches.
Are you serious?
Oh, yes, my God. Tall. That's Tyler.
She's tall and she's single, ladies.
Oh, my God.
And Tyler. She's on the market.
S or G?
S or G. 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 Of course.
Okay.
G.
Oh, my God. Okay.
We're all queer. Everyone's
I know.
Okay, sometimes.
If you had a straight 6'7" roommate, I would. That, it would be so out of left field. I'd have to put my laptop. I would have to shut my laptop and go for a walk.
But I'd every actually, now and then, in my experience, I have found a man who does want to have sex with me for once.
And that is, and that can be considered
queer. Clark's like, I'm really happy for you.
It's a great experience. I will say I usually have the opposite. It's funny you say that, Pat. Most of my friends, I have a lot of queer friends, but most of my friends are straight men because I did go to Dartmouth, which is like,
oh my God, curveball.
Pinnacle of, yeah, heterosexuality.
Bro, so, bro.
Deep bro. Yeah. And my first, in the first 4.5 years I lived here, I lived with my one of my best friends from college. Shout out to Henry Lerman, who is now a VP, honey, of development at Amazon.
Oh, my God.
Okay, Henry.
Taking, I know we all pitch here. I know we all have shows.
Everyone in this room pitches. Everyone in this room pitches.
Constantly. Henry, I just want to say I hope you're doing well. Okay, I'm about to go the freak off because I'm obsessed with this next product. So here's the deal. You know, friends don't let friends live with anything less than amazing hair. So think of me as your friend who wants you to be happy and to try Function of Beauty. This, I'm not exaggerating, y'all. I'm not trying to be dramatic, but my Function of Beauty shampoos came and I use them. And honestly, and I, first of all, I've my whole life, you guys know I'm a 2-in-1 Pert Plus kind of girl because that's what my mom would buy our household. But after one time trying my Function of Beauty, my hair is so soft that even my boyfriend was like, your hair looks really good. And I was like, it's Function of Beauty. Now, everyone's saying, well, what is Function of Beauty, you dumb bitch? Function of Beauty is the world leader in customizable beauty, offering precise formulas for your hair's specific needs.
Here's how to get started. First, take a quick but thorough quiz to let them know a little bit about your hair type and your hair goals even, such as lengthen, volumize, and oil control. And because your hair changes with the season, you can change your hair goals before every shipment. Next, choose your color and fragrance or go fragrance and dye free. Then, Function's team determines the perfect blend of ingredients, bottles your formula, and delivers it right to you.
Every ingredient Function of Beauty uses is vegan and cruelty-free, and they never use sulfates or parabens. You can also go completely silicone-free. There are over 54 trillion possible formulations, and Function of Beauty has over real... This happened last time. And Function of Beauty has over 50,000 real five-star reviews. And Function of Beauty offers completely personalized formulas for body and skincare as well, so you can customize your beauty routine from hair to toe.
So promise me that you will never buy off the shelf just to be disappointed ever again, sweetheart. Go to functionofbeauty.com/seektreatment to take your quiz and save 20% on your first order. That applies to their full range of customized hair, skin, and body products. Go to functionofbeauty.com/seektreatment to let them know we sent you and to get 20% off your order. functionofbeauty.com/seektreatment.
And that's that.
And that's all she wrote. But anyways, I'm sorry, you were Blair Waldorf. And what happened next?
And I would say a little bit also of like maybe like a Tracy Flick Moon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I could totally see those two
that
women.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Right? But also, I think it's important to note that there was quite a bit of a Regina, to stay in this astrology metaphor, Regina George rising. You know?
Oh, wow. What an interesting combination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sort of really took Mean Girls to heart and became what I think could only be described as a bully. the thing is, the reason why I'm okay saying it is because the people who I was bullying, I think mostly thought it was a bit and didn't take it seriously. Like, they mostly just laughed at me when I said mean things.
So you kind of reverse bullied yourself.
Apparently. That's just yeah, that tracks.
That's crazy. What made you want to be a bully? besides Regina's performance.
It just looked so fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
It does look fun.
There is something. Sorry.
And that shout out to Rachel McAdams for her portrayal of that queen. But it just was like, who wants to be anyone other than Regina George?
Right. Totally. Yeah. I don't know if it's a gay thing too either, or if it's everyone thing, but there is something growing up where it's like, as a gay boy, you see like a mean girl and it's like, that's incredible. Like, that's mm-hmm. obviously the final form. That's like what I want to be. Like, that's amazing.
Yes. Top to bottom.
Top to bottom. So thank you to Rachel McAdams for making bullying look so fun.
God bless. Okay. So do I now go to who am I?
No. Yes. We're not nearly done because I'm just so fascinated that I didn't know you were tech adjacent and that you were mm-hmm. deeply in the tech world. I figured mm-hmm. that you, because I was introduced to you by the movie Love, Simon, so I figured you were like always kind of an actor through and through. Often when someone's in a movie,
they didn't walk into your tech job and say, it's gotta be you.
I was standing on the corner of Hollywood and Vine yes. and someone pulled up in a car and said, are you an actor?
Yes. That kid's got X Factor.
Like in Dartmouth, were you like, did you pursue any kind of like, did you do comedy or writing or acting or?
Yeah. So my acting journey is I started when I was a child. I sort of have, not only do I have a tech background that I'm shocking you with, I also have a period of my life where I was a child actor. I can't say child star, which I think is a really important distinction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was a child actor, which means like, you know, those of us who have the lived experience of acting now, that's what it was like, wanting things and not getting them, mm-hmm. like going to many, many callbacks and being told you're amazing and perfect and beautiful, and then losing it to the same guy that you've lost every other thing to. That was the majority of my childhood. But, you know, I did I signed with my first agent when I was 7.
Oh, wow.
My first audition was for the movie Hardball with Keanu uh-huh. Reeves. Do you remember?
I remember that.
So people there loved that movie.
They sure did. And as was, you know, the norm in the 90s, the narrative was one of the poor black child, which, you know, I'm sure you aren't making any assumptions about me, but that probably isn't one of the things that comes to mind when you look at me. And I would say if that's the assumption you made, then it is correct. So as I was preparing for this audition, I'm 7 years old and my mom is like, okay, let's run these lines. And I'm like, great. I go through the scene and she's like, oh no, honey, you have to say the words that are on the page. And I'm like, I don't know. Okay.
Hey, that's random as fuck.
I'm like, I don't know why you're giving me notes.
That was rude of her.
An actor. Yeah.
Hey, your mom is a bully. She taught you how to be.
Okay. I learned from her. And so we did it again. And she was like, no, you have to say what's written on the page. And turns out I was going through, and first I was bleeping out all the swear words because I had been taught at that point, we do not swear.
Of course.
For adults, not for children. And also, I was changing the grammar because it was written for these kids from, you know, lower income families and lower income, you know, written by white people who were like, black people speak in Ebonics, right? And I was like, no, black people speak with correct grammar.
Mm.
And so I was changing the sides to be grammatically correct. And my mom was like, no, honey, you can't do that. Needless to say, I did not get the part. It was the first of many.
And I think that we can all agree that the movie Hardball suffered for that.
Hey.
Yes.
I certainly believe that. But so tech, the reason why the tech piece came in was because I was here. I've just sort of always, and it's the reason why Dartmouth came in as well. I've always been kind of simultaneously been doing, I'm over here doing acting when there's work to be had, when there are roles for queer black people, I'll take them if they're offered. And then when there aren't, I'm not the kind of person who can just sit around and wait endlessly. I'm like, I'm going to go get a college degree from a really good school. I'm going to go. I mean, the tech piece was mostly a lot of my friends were going to grad school. Of course, coming out of Dartmouth, everyone works in finance. So they were all mm-hmm. going to HBS and they're now Harvard Business School. And they're now all like,
thank you for knowing. I have no idea what HBS is.
And they're now all like plus or minus 2 years of like either going in or just coming out. And I was like, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to business school. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to like learn a skill set that I can't learn anywhere else. And so that coincided with having no money and a month where I charged my rent, which was only $900. So like if you don't have $900 mm-hmm. in your bank account for your primary thing of rent, that like, you know, like other things you can, you know.
That's why it's the scariest thing is like to go up in rent, because it's like you want to have a number that you feel like if worse comes to worse, you can figure out a way to scrape it together somehow. You know what I mean? Like, it's really scary when it gets high enough to be like, well, I hope I just have that. You know, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
And that's so like, I didn't. I charged it to my mom's credit card through Venmo.
Oh my God.
Thank God she's not listening to this anymore, because then they called her and they were like, did you do this? And she was like, no. And she called me and she was like, did you charge $900 to my credit card? And I was like, no.
Aww.
How bizarre. So she had to cancel her account. I feel so bad. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
That coincided with a text message from my friend who was like, hey, do you want to work at Snapchat? I have
oh my God
gig that's like we're hiring for people. And I was like, no, I don't. but also I need money. And so I worked at Snapchat for 3 years.
Wow. So if I were to ask, like, do you know how, like, and to me, tech can mean a trillion things. Can you, like, code if I were to ask you right now to code?
I'm not that side. I'm, so, like, all of tech, I would say, falls into two categories. There's the people who are smart. They're the people who are, like, actually doing the work, the coding and the, you know, the back end, that, like, actually understand what they're doing. And then there's the rest of us who pretend like we know what we're doing and get paid a ton of money and all these amazing benefits.
I want to be on that side.
Here's the thing. Everyone wants to be on that side and everyone's trying to be on that side. Mm. And it's actually a lot harder to get into the cushy. You need, it's like, it's, I mean, it's actually a lot like entertainment too. You have to present the narrative and they have to believe it.
Yeah. Mm.
And then you have to also be good. I mean, this is why fraud is such an issue throughout our entire generation, but throughout tech especially. You have to, like, constantly know how to show that you know enough to be worthy of the job description, but that's okay. That's not my expertise. You know, have to know when to step in and when to step out.
Yeah.
And some people can play that game. And
I cannot.
I can't either. It also helps if you're straight and white and male, I will say.
Yeah.
But I'm none of those things. And so my 3 years at Snapchat were a living hell, which even though I'm not in control, I'm going to go ahead and transition us into who am I?
Yes, I'm sorry.
I would say that period of my life was sort of defined by the archetype of Andy Sachs from Devil Wears Prada.
Okay.
Where I was in this job that I knew I'd hated and I knew I didn't like, and I also knew wasn't going to be the end point. I knew that I was only there for a period of time. I also knew that it was, quote, the job that a million girls would kill for. And so there was an awareness of that. And I always had that monologue that Nigel gives her. Wake up, Six. You're not trying, you're whining.
Oh, my God.
And the thing of, like, if you don't want to be here, don't be here. You can quit.
Cerulean. You know? It's the Cerulean. Also Cerulean. Famous part of the movie, Cerulean. Honey.
The best part.
My contribution, screaming the word Cerulean.
I see. You think this has nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
You. Go to your closet. Yeah. And it was sort of, you know, I had to have this come to Jesus, like, grow up, girl, moment. Where before that, everything was very like, I don't want to be an adult and my parents are cutting me off. And isn't that crazy? And that experience was like, you are here for a reason. You can choose to be here for as long as you want. I actually shot Love, Simon while I was working there.
And oh my God, that's amazing.
How did you book? You just like were still doing auditions?
Full circle moment. The agents, the actual agents had left by this point. But the agency that I signed with when I was 7 was the agency that got me the appointment for Love, Simon.
Wow.
Because we shot it in Atlanta. And so those were Atlanta agents that I'd had. I booked it as a local hire. And then we shot it over 6 weeks. And my dates were like 2 weeks at the front and 2 weeks at the end. And then there was like a 2 week block in the middle, which was Jennifer Garner's block where they shot her out. And we had to kind of like, didn't get to meet her, unfortunately, because of that. But for those 6 months, I flew myself back and forth. I literally commuted from Los Angeles to to Atlanta every week, twice a week. And
that is wild.
Yeah, it was 8
That is so exhausting.
In 6 weeks. It was awful. Yeah, it was really dark.
And afterwards, you were like, it's time. It's time to leave Snapchat behind.
I wish I could say that it was another year before the movie came out. So we shot it in March of 2017. The movie came out in March of 2018. I then left. My last day at Snapchat was June 29th, 2018. So like 3 or 4 months after. At that point, I was on a sales roll. And so I was like, I am not leaving in the middle of a quarter, honey. I am getting my commission and I am bouncing. Joke's on me, those racists. They literally still owe me $6,000 for my
Are you serious?
Are you joking?
Snapchat needs to pay my friend Clark.
If any of our 30 listeners are all connected to Snapchat, you need to pay our friend Clark.
Hello, where's my money? Evan is literally talking about, like, he wrote this LOL letter to everyone the week that George Floyd died about, like, how we stand with our black employees. And he was like, you know, talking about how we need reparations and how, like, billionaires should be taxed and should be funding reparations. And also how he lived in the black dorm at Stanford and how he studied abroad at South Africa.
Wait, who is this? The Snapchat guy?
Evan Spiegel. Yeah, the CEO.
I don't know him.
Everyone was like, huh? Like, what? Why are we talking about reparations? How about you just pay us?
Yeah, can you start with paying your employees? The craziest idea.
Just the regular amount. Let's start with that, and then we'll look towards more.
That's insane. That must be infuriating. Truly. Oh, my God.
What's also infuriating, by the way, I'm really, like, dropping bombs on this podcast here.
I love it.
That's what it's for.
But this, I feel like, will relate. You guys will relate. And it actually touches on one of the notes that I made that I wanted to make sure I brought up with you guys. What was also infuriating was that I wrote a 3,500 word piece about this right when the George Floyd stuff was happening, and I shopped it around to 5 outlets, of course, all white editors, and they all passed, of course.
Brave.
Quite, you know. Meanwhile, all of their homepages were like, we stand with black people, and like hashtag amplify black voices.
Beautiful graphic design, I'm sure.
Yeah, truly. Yeah. Truly. But the reason why I brought that up was because Pat, on a previous episode, and this actually might have been Spawn, LOL, but y'all were talking about your writing practice. And I am curious... I've literally turned this into my podcast, but
no,
we are so happy to listen and learn and relax. I'm like, oh my God, you're taking care of us.
I'm trying.
You're being Oprah towards us.
You're making it very easy.
Which honestly, if you watch an Oprah interview, she, even when she's being interviewed, she's in control of where the interview is going. So I'm kind of pulling, and again, I'm
and we're the opposite, and that even when we are interviewing, we're not in control. So it's kind of like we're kind of the opposite of Oprah, if that makes sense.
So do y'all have a writing practice? Are y'all writing every day? You were saying you're taking some Skillshare class, some crazy, like, essay writing class?
So this part of, I have to be honest that we were sponsored by it.
Pat's very good about routine, and I'm chaotic.
But it goes in such ebbs and flows. Yeah. Right now, it's good, but it's been, you know, it's also so assignment based. Like I had a draft I had to write, so it was very easy to spend time on that, and it was something I'd never written like that form before. It was a feature length, so I've never done that before. So it was a lot of like trying to figure it out, and I think really like I've done. The Skillshare with Roxane Gay is very helpful, but like that's obviously geared towards essays. And, you know, I've done other little classes like that online and they are helpful, but ultimately I think it's just like everyone's practice is so designed for them. Like it's just what works for you. And like everyone's brain is so different. And so I think like having to do this thing I've never done before and not really having a lot of direction or instruction has like forced me to be like, just figure out a way how to get a story onto pages. And for me, like it's been like, what I've had to learn is like, I really rely on like, I can't start with an outline, which is counterintuitive, but like, I can't conceptualize something that just isn't even there yet. Like, I just have to start with the beginning and just start writing towards a character, like characters towards like a story without knowing how long anything's going to be or worrying about page count or anything. And then like, once I start to get a sense of like where I think it should go, then I like pull back and like outline a bit. And then I go back into a script and then I'm like, well, now this part is blurry to me. So I have to go back out and like outline more and then go back. So for me, it's like always like back and forth between like zooming out and zooming in. But that's because me personally, I can't see like ideas that aren't there yet. Like I have to just like, but some people are very good at that. So then they're really good at like outlining and then going to script from that. So I think it just depends.
Right. What about you, Kat?
I think my brain works in the opposite way of Pat. I'm like, I have to see big picture. I have to know exactly where I'm going and then I can make it fun.
That's how I feel. I'm very outline. I'm like detailed outline.
What are you working on right now?
This is also part of the problem is that I'm a little scattered. I am not a monogamous creative. I have a million projects going at once. I'm very poly creative in that way, I guess.
Our first poly guest.
Groundbreaking.
Yes, I'm a poly queen. And I kind of think of it as that's because I need time to sort of figure out what story I want to tell, I guess.
Yeah.
Like I have the first layer and then I think about it as like a baking analogy or like a cooking, even though I do neither. But the idea that like the things take their time, you know.
Totally.
A three-layer cake is going to take more time than, again, why would I choose a space that I know nothing about? But, you know, and it's like my point just being, if it isn't done, it isn't done, and you can't rush it. It's going to take more time. And so that's why I have a lot of things going at once. I have various scripted shows and features in various stages of development from like a kernel of an idea all the way to like me hounding people being like, hey, just following up for the 20th time based on that time you told me you loved my show and wanted to buy it but haven't responded yet. Like, do you still love it and want to buy it? And also like, could you do that soon?
And also just, hi, in general, what's going on with you, bitch?
I think that's exactly validate me and you're really fucking with my daddy issues.
I think that is like important because it's also like, for instance, since I finished that little project, like I haven't written since because like that's done. But it's like, I think it's helpful to keep the wheels greased in terms of like, if I'm not writing every day, then I'm writing no days. So like whenever I have to start writing again, it will be a huge effort to like start. Whereas if I could find something to work on in the meantime, like some other project, then it's much easier to always kind of be like in that rhythm than it is to go in and out of it.
And I have a rare disease where I have a newsletter that used to come out every Monday and now it comes out every Tuesday, but usually it comes out on Wednesdays and or Thursdays. But as long as something comes out, but I'm really glad I'm making myself at least try and send it once a week because it's just like,
that's a lot.
I never write unless someone says, can you write this essay, you know, then for next week. And then I love it. Then I'm like, I'm a grade A student. I love being told what to do. It's kinky. It's helpful. It's hot. It's now.
I'm trying the ultimate thing here, which is sort of like the underlining thesis of this question, is that I am trying to shift my focus away from the outside in, which is partially LA. It's partially the fact that, you know, every creative conversation starts with like, this show is really hot. What if you made like a queer black version of that?
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't know what the queer black version of the West Wing is. You know, like, I don't know why you said that.
Until now.
Okay. Like, here's the pitch and you better buy it.
It's so frustrating.
I'm trying to shift more to like, do the project, you know, follow the creative thing. And if that becomes a novel, then it becomes a novel. If it becomes... Or even if it just becomes like a funny tweet, like maybe that's what it is. But, you know, like trying not to think. And so I feel like so much of, and this is who was I, but also a little bit of who am I and who I'm trying to transition out of. Mm-hmm. So much of my thought process about career and work was looking at other people and looking at careers that I admired or or work that I admired and being like, okay, so they had their sitcom and they had their feature and then they had their book of essays and then they had their podcast and then they had their, you know.
Even
and
hearing you say that is like making me like literally have a panic attack.
Yeah, exactly. Because like that's not a way to write, to live your life of like, okay, so what's my book going to be about? I know everyone who has the life I want to have has a book. So what's my book?
Yeah. You know? But a lot of times you see those people's books and they reek of this thing of like, this person did not want to write a book. You know what
I
mean?
Yes. Yes.
This person had a gun to their head and was told, you need to write a book right now.
So many celebrities, they think it's a joke throughout the whole book. If they're like, and I don't really want to be writing this and I'm not good at writing this. And it's like, please, please God, do not write it then because it's hell to read.
It really is.
Well, for me, it's helpful too, is like just reminding myself, like the only thing I am in control of is like sitting down in front of a computer or a notebook and like writing, and I am not in control of like what comes out, the quality of it, or like what kind of writing it is, which is obviously really hard to manage when you're being paid to write a specific thing. But you just kind of have to let yourself like just sit down and work and not worry about like what and the other side is the other that other side of the industry of like a lot of reps and a lot of development people don't always think that way. So it's a lot of like make the queer Black West wing. It's like,
yes. Yeah. It's so outside in. And so I will say who will I be?
Who would I like to be?
I do really feel like I am on an upswing right now. I feel like I've said this a bunch of times. Forgive me if people have heard me say this. And I'm speaking mostly to the friends who I text aggressively and mostly don't respond. But every creative career is one that goes in a parabolic motion, right? We're always, there's our ups and there are downs. And I feel like, and those are relative too, right? Like Meryl's ups and downs are going to be different maybe than my ups and downs.
For me, they're the same for me. Me and Meryl have the same ups and downs.
And I love that for you.
She keeps texting me and I'm like, I'm not going to respond to you if you keep texting me these long things.
I'm like, girl, I'm on an up and you're on a down. I can't engage with you right now.
It's going to fuck with me.
It's going to fuck with me. So I feel like I'm on this upswing and I'm excited about what's going to happen. I feel like there is an imminent glow up waiting for me in these coming years. And
that's so fun.
I think I will evolve into my final form, which is the one and only woman that we've mentioned a million times on this podcast, Miss Oprah.
Is that kind of a, do you want, I mean, I'm sure your podcast, I'm sure, is incredible because you have such a way of talking about like things that it is Oprah adjacent. Like I do feel taken care of, but
I received the compliment because I thought you were going to finish. I thought you were going to stop at talking. You have such a way of talking. Thank you.
I don't know if anyone's ever told you this, but you talk.
It was your Beyonce thank you moment.
Do you want to be almost like, do you want to be a hosting type person or an interviewer type person?
I want to, not in a career sort of aspiration way, I would say certainly like, in this delusional world where I'm comparing myself to Oprah, which I would say is the delusion I exist in most times, I think of myself as being a person who would want to do more acting than she does, for sure. Like I am a performer first and foremost, and I'm actually directing short right now that I wrote. And
oh, cool!
It has been the only reason I thank you for saying it's cool. I don't know that it necessarily is.
Someone says I direct, I'm like, how?
Right. No, I'm like, and also I'm always like, what does that even mean? As someone who's literally been on set at least 5 times, I'm still like, what are they doing?
Literally same. And I have been having these experiences of like stepping into a leadership role, you know, stepping into making these creative choices and having to own them. And that feels really good. It feels really autonomous. It feels a lot less like waiting for someone to come give me something. And it's more like I'm creating and putting things out into the world. And so, you know, in terms of the comparison to Oprah, I always say I feel like I want to be asked to be president of the United States, but I don't actually want to be the president.
To be invited to be president.
That might be mm-hmm. the best answer we've had on the show for who do you want to be. I want to be asked to be president. And that's it.
And it's say perfect. No.
And say no.
I want to politely decline the presidency.
That's so funny.
But I want the vast majority of people to want me to accept.
Right. Like you wouldn't like, because it would be so humiliating to like choose to run for president.
Oh,
like,
God.
Is there anything more embarrassing?
Oh,
but they just kind of like seek you out and they're like, we couldn't help but notice you have a way of talking. Mm-hmm. Wait, what was I going to say? Do you care about marriage? Do you care about getting married? And do you want kids?
I have also separated my desire for kids from my desire to be married. Mm. I used to feel that, I mean, I would love to be married. And speaking to the questions of how many people have I dated and all that kind of stuff, I have unfortunately, which I think is connected to the fact that I came out so early, never had a serious adult relationship. I've had like a guy that I was sort of, I'm even nervous to describe what our relationship was because I think he probably listens to the pod.
Oh my God.
Shout out to your complicated relationship with Clark.
I know. Sweet man. And I did really like him a lot, but it was college and people didn't really date at Dartmouth. It was more like,
yeah,
who are you hooking up with semi-exclusively, but also like,
yeah. It was like, who are you drunk
it's
and
funny
hanging out with in public?
I didn't have a relationship till I was 30, and I credited that to coming out so late.
Mm.
But I think both of them are like probably like weird little, I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's sort of, you know, the way I think about it is that in those early days, like the coming out experience is, there are, not the actual experience of coming out, but the process that happens afterwards is fairly similar regardless of when it happens. There's this feeling of like the euphoria of this is new and is this the kind of person that I am? Is that the kind of person? And then you sort of settle into it and then at some point you kind of forget, you know, like I don't even really identify as gay anymore because I find myself, it's not that I don't identify as gay, it's just that I find myself saying queer more frequently to be more inclusive. Mm. And I'm not thinking about my gayness because there's no one in my life reflecting it back to me, you know? So anyway, all that to say, like, I went through that when I was young and I had all those moments when I was young and there was no one else sort of to have the, like, hot sex with when we're figuring it out together. And by now, I'm like, I mean, we could do that or we could do nothing, you know? I mean,
like, two amazing options.
You know, one is better than the other. The nothing is the better option. So
yeah, totally.
I don't know. I mean, I want a boyfriend and I'm here on Seek Treatment.
Okay, this is huge.
Love. Seeking romance.
Oh my God. I
slide into the DMs.
I was
going to
say, slide into Clark's DMs if you're liking what you're hearing.
People need to be sliding in. But I think that's all, whatever.
I think it's time for Crush of the Week, as crazy as that might sound.
Yeah. I think it might be even time for that.
Pat, Clark, Sally. Do you have a Crush of the Week?
Yeah, Sally, you're in the mix here. You're in the game.
You're fully in the mix. You're a part of our family, Sally. You're part of the Seek Treatment family now.
You know, this is so random, but only because I ended up talking about him today in a Say It With Me general meeting. And this is like an evergreen Crush of the Week, but it's like, why not like create it? It is the person who plays Avery Jackson on, yes, Say It With Me, Grey's Anatomy.
Jesse Williams.
Yes, Jesse Williams is my Crush of the Week. He's always been my Crush of the Week. I've never devoted an episode to it. And I have to finally come out and say that, yes, he is, was, and always will be my crush of every week.
Can I say one good thing about Los Angeles is obviously celebrity spotting. And I, in 2015, was driving east on Melrose for any LA girls. I was going through the like Beverly Groves turning into West Hollywood space. And as I pulled up to the light, who was sitting in an Audi with the top down, Audi A4, none other than Jesse Williams.
Oh my God.
I literally almost got in a car accident because I was staring at him. And he saw that I almost got in a car accident and he laughed at me not laughed at me, but like laughed at the situation.
With you. He laughed with you. He
You guys are really close friends. And maybe
probably we're married. Every second.
Oh, yeah. And that doesn't mean you're not together, but it does mean you're married.
I forgot. It's a sad marriage because he doesn't exist in my life, but it does exist. Yeah.
Totally.
Do you guys have crushes of the...
This is going to be a little less sexy, but my crush of the week is this amazing dish I made with lentils. Okay, shout out to red lentils. It was kind of like a dal situation. It's like some garlic and onions and like cumin and ginger. And it's like, it's so good. I'm trying to cook for myself more. I'm trying to take care of myself. It's hard.
I don't do that.
Me neither, unfortunately.
No, well, I did make myself an undercooked. Like after... Especially after my boyfriend turned stay with me 30 last weekend, we had like this backyard little grill hang, and I was just like shoveling hot dogs and packets mad because I'm too obsessed with hot dogs. So
you know, I know that you're obsessed with hot dogs. I get mad that you talk about hot dogs too much.
Okay, how many I just did it again.
Do you eat in a year, Kat?
I mean, more than government probably wants.
I was going to say, I was told 4 should be our max a year.
Really?
That is, who says who?
I mean, I you're right.
CDC says that.
I don't have a source to cite. Forgive me for spreading misinformation.
Some Hollywood exec wants me to have no more than 4 hot dogs a year. Well, they don't know
some
what I'm made of.
Snapchat asshole.
Yeah,
by the water
some
cooler.
Fucking 7 foot tall.
Clark, do you have a crush of the?
Who is my crush of the week? I just had one, and my crush of the week is actually Tracee Ellis Ross. Because I just got a text message just before signing on here that Pattern Beauty, her company, has the styling cream that I need back in stock.
Oh.
So I am grateful to Tracee.
She has the most fantastic wardrobe. Everything she wears, I'm like, that is exactly what I would dream of wearing. Like, it's so, everything is a statement piece. That's my dream in my wardrobe. I love her.
Okay, cool. Do you guys feel hot today? I feel hot.
I feel kind of hot.
You look gorgeous.
Thank you.
RN. And are you mad at me? Clark, are you mad at me?
I couldn't possibly be.
Oh my God. Thank God up in heaven. Catherine, are you mad at me?
No, I'm. Are you mad at me because you're in a different room than usual?
No. Oh, no. That's just because Angela's in Rhode Island, so I can do whatever I want.
Fuck yeah. The feeling. Wait, Clark, are you mad at me?
I'm not mad at you.
Just even though I want to eat more than 4 hot dogs a year. In fact, I ate 4 on Saturday.
No, I'm not mad at you. I'm worried for you.
Oh,
I'm deeply
that's
concerned.
Perfect answer.
Sally, how do you feel towards
Sally,
me right now?
Sally, come on.
Mad
be
or
real.
Glad?
I feel glad.
Oh, thank you.
Don't lie. Wait, I'm curious. Okay, Clark, tell our listeners how they can find you, how they can listen to the pod. Give us all the deets. Give us all the goods.
I'm at Mr. Clark Moore everywhere. Where's my podcast? On all the platforms. What did they say? Wherever you
I don't
get
know,
your
we're
podcasts.
Just like,
wherever
we're just you get like, your go, we're like, go look for them.
That one. Yeah.
Wait, I have to ask again. I'm sorry. Can you say the name of it one more time?
Soul Bomb by Clark Moore.
Soul Bomb.
Soul Bomb by Clark Moore, produced by intern Sally.
Mm-hmm. And my
and
fantastic
Simone.
Producer, Simone Spira. Great
Amazing.
Memory. Yes, Kat.
Well, it's when someone's name is fab, it's
right?
six. I've always
Wait,
wanted
also
to call
Simone.
Because
Simone's having a moment right now, the name Simone. Clark, do you
Why?
Watch Drag Race? There's a really good drag queen on Drag Race called Simone. And she's
I don't.
Absolutely slaying the game.
Yeah, I'm unfortunately not a Drag Race queen. But I do have one
I
question.
I used to be
Wait.
That. I want Wait. Credit for having. I want credit for using to have not watched Drag Race.
Yeah, I'm with you here. What happened? What was
sense.
The conversion?
It just was pandemic, and my boyfriend does drag, and I just kind of watched.
Oh, that's
it,
a good reason.
Then I liked it, so that's where I am
right.
now emotionally. What was
right.
your question?
Wow. My question is: there is a word in the Seek Treatment podcast theme song. That I can never figure out.
You wished for a sign from above.
It's
hey bitch, what is your deal? Tell us how you feel. You wish for a sign from above. Here's a podcast about boys dating
and love. Seek treatment. If you're
boring
as fuck, seek treatment.
If you're unlucky in love.
Unlucky in love.
Seek treatment if you just can't take a hint.
Take
I
a
think.
Hint.
Okay. Seek it was treatment. Unlucky. That was the word.
I look in love.
I was thinking it was like if you're a I thought it was three syllables. If you're a duckada in love.
And that works too.
What's remix. The duckada? Yeah.
Unlucky in love. Wait, I'm sad that I have to go because we could talk for hours. But Clark, we'll have to have you on IRL.
Yes, yes. Oh, I would love to come back. Please have me back.
Okay, thank you so much for doing this. And thank you
for having me.
It was so fun. And everyone, go listen to Soul Bomb. And thank you to Sally. And live, laugh, love.
Bye.